In Mitt Romney's acceptance speech, he compared himself to someone who can walk on the moon, but not someone who can make the sea levels rise.
God bless Neil Armstrong. Tonight, that American flag is still there on the moon. And I don't doubt for a second that Neil Armstrong's spirit is still with us. That unique blend of optimism, humility, and the utter confidence that when the world needs someone to do the really big stuff, you need an American.
And he argues the American who can lead with optimism, humility, and confidence is him, not Barack Obama.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Now, there was a lively debate on Twitter after the speech last night. I don't know if you were on there, about whether that was just a joke about Obama being able to walk on water, or that more seriously, in Mitt Romney's mind, climate change denial equals help is on the way. Science writer Matt Novak tweeted that climate change laugh line is going to be in every documentary from the latter half of the 21st century. So we will play more excerpts and take your reactions. And like we did yesterday, and screeners, get ready for this, let's begin with undecided voters. If you were genuinely undecided going into this week's convention, did Mitt Romney do it for you last night, or bring you part of the way, or turn you off? 212-433-WNYC. If you came into this week undecided, we want to hear your reactions to Mitt Romney's speech last night. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. First shout out for people undecided, convincible, going into last night's speech. And guess who's here to help us talk through this? It's Cokie Roberts, NPR senior news analyst and ABC News political commentator. Hi, Cokie.
How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing all right. So what's your headline?
Well, it's actually, today my headline would be that Clint Eastwood has stolen the headlines from Mitt Romney, which is the last thing on earth they wanted to have happen.
Inadvertently stole the show.
And not in such a pleasant fashion. I was on the podium all through the convention and had exactly the same vantage point as the speakers, so I could see what Clint Eastwood was seeing and everybody else. And one thing he was seeing was a blank teleprompter. This was something that he was making up as he went along, and it sure sounded that way.
Well, I guess so. And so what do you think actually happened there? I mean, you know, you don't want to kind of get down on an older guy who maybe thought his ad-libbed performance act was going over better than it was. But didn't anybody vet that?
I think not. My guess is what happened is that you get Clint Eastwood, and you're really happy to get Clint Eastwood, and you say let's do a speech, and he says, oh no, I'll just go out there and talk, and you so kind of say okay,
and you say I'm not second guessing Clint Eastwood because
exactly.
I mean
and maybe you say. Maybe you say, please don't go over 5 minutes, but that's kind of the most you can do under those circumstances.
So what did you think of Mitt Romney's sea level rise, heal the planet joke?
I thought it was fine. We really get way too bent out of shape over jokes these days. It's just, the whole world has got to get a sense of humor.
Even though I heard someone on TV afterwards, Chris Hayes, maybe remind us there are structural engineers working underground in lower Manhattan right now figuring out how to literally save the subways from the sea level rise that is apparently on the way.
No, we know all of that. I mean, it's not that we don't know these things, but you still get to make jokes about it.
And the idea of...
I mean, if you didn't get to make jokes about anything in politics, it would be a very, very sad and depressing kind of life. So, I mean, and we would certainly not have any late night comedians, who were pretty funny about all of this.
So it didn't say to you, don't aim for the moon or try to accomplish great abstract things. Just try to stay down to earth and help regular families, a way of tarring Obama.
Well, I think that he is saying try to help regular families, but pay attention to what the needs are right here, right now. And his line about what America needs is jobs, lots and lots of jobs, I think was a very smart line. And of course, that's exactly what people are looking for.
And so let me play that line, because this idea of pitting ordinary folks against something profound wasn't just a one-off in that C-level joke. Listen.
What is needed in our country today is not complicated or profound. Doesn't take a special government commission to tell us what America needs. What America needs is jobs, lots of jobs.
The war on profundity in pursuit of jobs.
I think we're getting into the weeds here with exegesis. I think that the line of what America needs is jobs is exactly what people needed to hear from Mitt Romney. Now, what happens next? You know, that's the real question. And did he open people's minds to supporting him who have not done so far? I mean, look, what we're looking at here, Brian, is kind of an interesting set of numbers. If you look at the people who supported Barack Obama in 2008, who are not supporting him now, it's some big groups in the population. It's whites. It's Catholics. It's married people. It's Midwesterners. It's independents. It's people 18 to 29. Even unmarried women, who are always the Democrats' biggest group, 70% of them supported him in 2008. And it's down to 61% now. So you have a whole bunch of groups of people who have where Obama's numbers among those people have dropped by anywhere from 5 to 10 points. But Romney has not picked them up. His numbers are exactly what John McCain's were with all of those people, with the exception of independents. And so Romney's job is to get those white voters, those Midwestern voters, those married voters, all of that. And the thing he's going to get them on is jobs.
And one of the groups that he's weak with, that he was trying to get last night, was women. And here is about a minute of how he tried to do that.
My mom and dad were true partners, a life lesson that shaped me by everyday example. When my mom ran for the Senate, my dad was there for her every step of the way. I could still see her saying in her beautiful voice, "Why should women have any less say than men about the great decisions facing our nation?" Don't you wish she could have been here at this convention? And heard leaders like Governor Mary Fallon, Governor Nikki Haley, Governor Susana Martinez, Senator Kelly Ayotte, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. As governor of Massachusetts, I chose a woman lieutenant governor, a woman chief of staff. Half of my cabinet and senior officials were women. And in business, I mentored and supported great women leaders who went on to run great companies.
All right. Mitt Romney feminist, Cokie.
Well, I mean, litany was legitimate. Those statements are all true. I thought actually in that one where he you could hear his voice barely getting through it, talking about his mother and father, and that was as important, I think, as anything he said substantively.
I agree.
About that. And actually the moment in talking about his mother and father where you really saw people in the hall anyway just have a catch in their throats was when he talked about how his father brought his mother a rose every day of their 60-plus-year marriage, and that she learned that he had died the day her rose didn't show up. I mean, that's goosebump-provoking territory.
And for people who watched earlier in the evening and saw the testimonial after testimonial from people who've worked for Mitt Romney
right.
or are personal friends of Mitt Romney, they were trying to unmannequin Mitt Romney. But you could tell that these people had genuine emotion and got genuine emotion from him. How much that changes anything, I don't know, and it wasn't
That's
in
right.
that 10 o'clock hour. But, you know, if you were looking for it, you could see, oh, okay, he is a real person with flesh and blood.
That's right. And, I mean, there were lots of character witnesses there. And so that all helps, you know. But what he has to do now is go out and say what that's going to mean, you know. Okay, that was a speech. He said the right things about jobs, all of that. And now what? And on the woman question, now, one thing to keep in mind about women is that all things being equal, women do vote more Democratic than men. I mean, that's been true since 1980. And in fact, if the 19th Amendment had never been ratified, Bill Clinton wouldn't have been elected president in 1996. You know, Bob Dole won the male vote. Clinton won the female vote by 16 points. So that has become a sort of fact of American politics. But even the women's vote. I said to you earlier about unmarried women, that is a huge Democratic constituency. And for that to have fallen off is a real problem for the president. It's not fallen off. I mean, he'll win it, but by less than he did last time, and if all things stay the same. And women in general, his numbers are off. So it is, you know, it's something that is worth Romney trying for. Whether he can get there or not is another question.
Let's hear from some of our callers who say they went into last night's speech undecided. 212-433-WNYC. And Charlie in Harlem, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Brian. Hi, Cokie.
Hi.
Hey, so I'm one of those people. I'm a white male Catholic. I actually live on Long Island, but I'm working in Harlem for the day. And I voted for Obama 4 years ago, and I voted for him because I really thought that he was going to make a difference and bring some change. And I understand that he came into office with a lot of baggage from the Bush administration. But honestly, I don't think he has been very effective. For me, it's all about jobs.
Did the speech last night, I want to stay focused for today on the speech
much. Sure. You know what it is? I just feel that, you know, I've watched the convention every night, and I feel, actually, I commented to my wife that I finally made up my mind last night that I'm voting for Romney and Ryan, because I just feel that, you know, like anything else, I'm taking a chance, and I think that, I don't think Obama's been effective, and I think that based on what
let me ask you, What was your stance going into that this convention in Tampa? I'm in Tampa still. I mean, were you undecided? Were you sort of looking to them to say, to show you some reason to vote for them because you were already disillusioned with Obama?
Yeah, I went into it feeling unsure about Romney.
And then what made you feel better?
Just how he comes across and what he has to say. And I do think, I mean, for me, really, it's more about Paul Ryan, honestly. Only because he came up with that budget plan to reduce the deficit, and I think something has to be done. But after hearing Romney speak and having picked Ryan, you know, it's hard to pinpoint one thing.
But we hear where it's landing with you. So, Charlie, thank you so much. We really appreciate you sharing your process with us.
It's a very interesting you know, perspective, because that's exactly what they needed to do. Now, unfortunately for Mitt Romney, Charlie's in New York, so it's not going to help him much.
Let's not tell everybody in our listening area that their votes don't matter. Richard in Manhattan, you also went in undecided last night?
Yes, I went in undecided. Good morning, by the way.
Hi.
And I went in undecided, and what I saw, by the way, I was undecided because I think Obama has done great in foreign policy, but he's been stalled by the Congress, and that's really not his fault. the Republican platform is just so strong, you can't get away from it. Secondly, I went to watch this Republican convention, and I said to myself, well, Paul Ryan is a dangerous guy. I don't believe him, and I don't think he's telling us the truth. Then I saw Condoleezza Rice, who was absolutely presidential, in my opinion, and obviously a woman of integrity. And then I saw this fiasco with Clint Eastwood, who made a mockery of the president and made a mockery of the role of the president and was unprofessional. And then Mitt came along and didn't do anything for me. So I think I'm back with Obama.
Interesting. So we've got one going each way. Let me get one more in here for now. Douglas in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Brian. Good morning. I'm a registered Democrat from Brooklyn, and I always vote, even though I'm losing faith in the system. I was undecided, and I still am undecided because I want to hear what the Democrats have to say. And but I thought that the speeches from Mr. and Mrs. Romney were very persuasive, and I might vote for them.
Douglas,
oh, that's interesting.
What could you hear? Maybe Cokie, you're going to ask the same question. What could you hear next week? Because this is a good way for an undecided person to approach it. Don't decide after one. Listen to both. What is it after liking a lot of this week that you'd be looking for next week?
Well, I just, you know, I need help in the economy. I need a better job. I'm having a lot of trouble paying the bills here. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I need to buy shoes for my kids and backpacks for my kids, and I'm short on money, you know what I'm saying? So I just need the economy to get better.
Paul Ryan had a line in his speech that I thought was somewhat similar to Ronald Reagan in 1980. He said, without a change of leadership, what makes you think the next 4 years are going to be any different from the last 4 years? Is that what you're thinking?
That statement struck me, yes. That statement struck me. And, you know, it seems like Obama, you know, I think he made a genuine effort to help the situation. He was confronted with a terrible big problem, but apparently his solution wasn't effective.
Douglas, thank you for your call. We'll continue in a minute with Cokie Roberts and your calls, 212-433-WNYC, especially from undecideds. We've gotten some really interesting calls so far. So if you went into this convention week and last night's Romney speech undecided, let's hear what your thinking process is this morning. 212-433-9692. And when we come back from the break, we're going to play what I think was the policy heart of Romney's speech. Stay tuned.
Today, the time has come for us to put the disappointments of the last 4 years behind us, to put aside the divisiveness and the recriminations, to forget about what might have been and to look ahead to what can be.
Mitt Romney from last night. We're taking calls from people who started the week undecided and talking to Cokie Roberts. And I want to come back to his Neil Armstrong Man on the Moon reference. I thought it set up the idea that he could restore a sense that America can do great things, that we're not in decline, kind of the opposite of his war on profundity. And I wondered, when will he lay it all out? Will he tell us what is Mitt Romney's JFK moment, his equivalent of putting an American on the moon within 10 years? And then he meandered on about his life and launched various attacks on President Obama. And I was thinking, where is it? Where is it? Will he set some kind of achievement goal for the country that could unify us and give us something positive to shoot for, all that Neil Armstrong is supposed to stand for? But then finally, I guess he did it. And it wasn't as romantic as putting a man on the moon. It was much more prosaic than that. But here it is. After 30 minutes of warm-up, I thought this was the centerpiece of the speech.
I have a plan to create 12 million new jobs. Paul Ryan and I have 5 steps. First, by 2020, North America will be energy independent by taking full advantage of our oil, our coal, our gas, our nuclear, and our renewables. Second, we'll give our fellow citizens the skills they need for the jobs of today and the careers of tomorrow. When it comes to the school your child will attend, every parent should have a choice and every child should have a chance. Third, we'll make trade work for America by forging new trade agreements. And when nations cheat in trade, there will be unmistakable consequences. And fourth, to assure every entrepreneur and every job creator that their investments in America will not vanish as have those in Greece. We will cut the deficit and put America on track to a balanced budget. And fifth, we will champion small businesses, America's engine of job growth. That means reducing taxes on business, not raising them. It means simplifying and modernizing the regulations that hurt small business the most. And it means that we must rein in the skyrocketing cost of health care by repealing and replacing Obamacare.
So Mitt Romney from his acceptance speech. And Cokie Roberts, does that count for you as a Neil Armstrong or mourning in America moment in a country that is desperate for jobs, promising to create 12 million jobs?
Well, the problem for me with it is that I've heard it before because it's pretty much his stump speech. But for the rest of the country who hasn't been paying attention, you know, because they're not crazy people like political journalists are, it probably was something that they could hold on to. But look, Brian, that stuff, the real specifics, are going to have to come out in the debates, if not before. And you can make a case that an acceptance speech at a political convention is not the place to put forth your 20-point program. But I think that if people believe that he's going to create 12 million jobs, that's meaningful. Now, the Obama administration instantly, actually before the speech was even delivered, put out press releases saying that the 12 million jobs are exactly what are projected to be created when as the economy grows according to current projections.
Is that true?
I assume that's true. I'd have to go back and look at the CBO numbers, and I'm in Tampa, where it's not easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I think that people. The real question is, who do people believe? You know, do they believe that this is something that Obama can do? Or do they believe that that somebody else has to be given a chance because they don't think Obama can do it anymore after the last 4 years?
And
that's what his job is going to be,
right?
Is to say to them, you know, because he's got to stop blaming Bush. That is true. It's true. He inherited a terrible situation. It's true that he has a recalcitrant Congress, to say the least. But it's also true that he has to present a vision now of the next 4 years where he gives people a sense that he's taking them in a direction that they think, okay, it's worth giving him another shot.
Before we go and take some more callers, on that notion of fact-checking, 12 million jobs or whatever,
right.
The New York Times today has a pretty blunt article on all the lies in the Romney and Ryan speeches. Headline, facts take a beating in acceptance speeches on alleged Medicare cuts and gutting workfare and who is responsible for the credit rating downgrade and whether Obama has created jobs, whether a GM plant in Ryan's hometown closed under Obama, it was under Bush, and the so-called apology tour. That's a lot. And the suggestion is that even though campaigns always engage in spin, that this year and that campaign's disregard for the facts is worse than others in the past. Do you think
it is?
I
think it's worse than others since we've started doing fact-checking, you know, as a sort of cottage industry. Campaigns.
Well, you're going to go back to Grover Cleveland or something like that?
No, I mean campaigns. You can even go back to the 1980s. But once you got into this world where you have PolitiFact and organizations that go about the business of fact checking candidate speeches and advertisements, which I am all for. I think that's wonderful. The candidates and the campaigns got more careful, and when somebody pointed out that there were mistakes, if not that there were lies or at least mistakes in some of these things, they'd pull the ad. That's not true anymore, and so it is different in that way. Now, you also though then get pushback, right? So Paul Ryan says the plant was closed when uh, in in within the year. When the Obama people come back and say it was closed under Bush, then the fact checkers come back and say, well, it's more complicated than that. Some jobs went in December 2008. More jobs went in 2009. So, you know, life is seldom completely black and white, and so people can claim that there is truth in what they are saying. But it is, you know, it is clearly something where this time around you are just, they're just kind of going straight out and saying what they're saying, and if somebody wants to point out the nuances, that's their problem as far as these campaigns are concerned.
Walter in Union County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Walter.
Hello?
Hi there. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to tell you that I'm self-employed, and I have had a very rough time. I did like the fact that Obama did try to help people like me who cannot get health care. At least with his plan, I'll be able to buy something. At the present moment, it's not possible. It's really been a failure. So I give him credit for his courage for that. But I have my support's going to go to Romney because I'm losing my house, I can't find a job, and something has to be done. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's just not improving. We need some kind of change.
And had you already come to that conclusion before the convention, or did something get said this week that helped put you over the top?
No, sir. I had an open mind about it. In fact, I'm looking forward to the both of them debating. But when I look at my day-to-day situation, in particular over the last 2 years, it's just getting worse. You know, the customers I have are not buying. We can't get financing. It's just like there's like this malaise. I don't know who you can point the finger at, but I think the CEO of the country has to, like, particularly with the mortgages. He, when they did the bailout, he did not stick up and say, banks, if people are in trouble, give them the workout. We are not getting the workout done. People are losing their homes because they're not getting the reduced interest. They're not getting the reduced principal. They're doing nothing. They're foreclosing. And the banks tell me the reason why is because there's no law that they have to, you know, redo these mortgages.
Right.
And it's a disgrace, and I never hear the president make any statements about it. He did do a small plan that you have to show 31% of your income, but it's so frivolous to do all the documentation, and a lot of us out here working part-time or, you know, other jobs, it's hard to prove all that income. If you're a postman or a teacher, you can prove all the income, but most of us got our loans just on no income verification, but we can still pay the mortgages if they're a little lower. But the other thing is with the jobs and trying to find another job, I've gone on dozens of interviews. They never call you back, and this just has to change, sir.
Walter, thank you so much, and I hope things turn up for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your process. Koki, that was so interesting to me for a number of reasons. For one thing, he is obviously someone with no animus toward Obama going into it, actually supports the health care, and he makes the kind of liberal point that government has bailed out the lenders, the banks, without bailing out the borrowers. And yet his conclusion is exactly what Romney was going for this week, which was, hey, look, Obama's a nice guy. He tried, but his policies failed. Let's give someone else a chance.
That's exactly right. And there was another part of it that I found very interesting. These are good callers, Brian. As, you know, you always have good callers, but this is very interesting today. He talked about the sense of malaise, and that is something that this Republican convention here in Tampa felt that they could exploit, that people are feeling down, that there's no, as one the Republican senator from New Hampshire said to me, you know, she goes to a town meeting, this is Kelly Ayotte, she goes to a town meeting and there's no pep in anybody's step. And New Hampshire is actually doing a whole lot better than most of the country. And there is, I think that there was that excitement about Obama and now a sense of disappointment, and that the Republicans are trying to in some ways say, we can make you happy about the country again. We can get you excited about America again. And you know, the first way we're going to do it is to get jobs. Now, you know, delivery is a whole nother story. And we will see whether they can deliver even enough by way of specifics to get elected, which is a huge if. But there is that sense that they can pick up on that depressed attitude that's out there.
Kieran in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling us.
Yeah, hi Brian. So my comment is that I'm deeply saddened to hear from our presidential candidate a joke about our environment. And I agree with Cokie Roberts that speeches should be interesting. They should be jokes, but there should be some taste to the jokes. If our president, our leader, can make a joke about environment, which have been, you know, there are scientific proofs about rising sea levels, it's a sad day, I think. And then about our energy plan, our candidate starts off with coal and gas drilling and oil.
Let me just
and
ask.
And the renewables are last on his list.
Were you undecided coming into this, or you were already pretty much in the Democratic camp and you were pretty offended by that?
So, no, I was very open. So I've been watching the convention. I've been hearing the speeches to get, you know, get a deep sense. And I was pretty undecided, but this really just broke it for me.
Kieran, thank you very much. So, Cokie, that kind of Republican smirk, if that's the way to put it, has an upside because it, you know, Chris Christie and everything attracts a certain kind of white working class male primarily, but maybe it turns off somebody like Kieran.
Yes, but, you know, and of course, what the Republicans have to be careful about, and you and I have talked about this before, is that, you know, they're not enough white males to go around. I mean, that does not a majority make. And so that's why you had so much outreach to women and outreach to Hispanics in this convention, although I think that it's going to cracking the Hispanic nut is going to be very, very difficult for Romney. And I think I've said this to you during the primaries, Brian, that, you know, at the time I kept saying the problem Romney was having in the primaries in terms of the general election was not what the other candidates were saying about him, but what he was saying about immigration. Because you cannot win without a better percentage of the Hispanic vote than John McCain got, which is 31%. And Romney's going to have a very tough time cracking that. Chris Christie, I assume you've talked about earlier this week.
Of course.
I thought that was just a terrible speech. It was a shame from the Republicans' perspective that it came on top of Ann Romney's speech, which was terrific.
Yeah, I thought just from a technical standpoint, he started way too hot. And he never kind of dialed it back so that he could warm into his crescendo. He started at his peak. And he just kept going and kept going and kept going. And I thought it made him less warm than we know here in the New Jersey area
be. That's exactly what I heard from a lot of people from New York and New Jersey was that, you know, often he's funny and you can sort of have a good time with him and all that. And he just came across as angry to me.
So before you go, if you could do some Eastwooding of your own, who would you put in your empty chair, and what might you ask them?
Oh, you know, I'm going to say something so nerdy, Brian, because, you know, I write these history books. So I guess that I would put Dolly Madison in my empty chair.
Ooh.
And ask her how she stood it. I mean, if we think it's bad now, it was really bad then. And she managed not only to put up with the constant attacks against her, but also to do it with such grace and style and to win over people of both political parties at a time of far worse partisanship than we're experiencing now.
That's why we love you, Cokie. You can come up with Dolly Madison and Clint Eastwood in the same breath. NPR's and ABC's Cokie Roberts, thank you so, so much.
All right. Always good to be with you, Brian.
And listeners, we'll do an Eastwooding call-in next hour, so think about it and then call us up next hour on who you would put in your empty chair and what you would ask them. But we'll continue breaking down Romney's speech and some of the others from the convention week with linguist John McWhorter coming up next. Stay with us.